from the Physics Department at the University of Alberta. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. So this is some stuff that we have been doing during the last 2 years, and it's also an important part of Henning Kuhl's PhD research project. He's not here because he's working for Shell during the summer, so this is why I am giving the talk. So what we have been doing is working on problem of migration and inversion in reflection seismology. And one of the problems that I noticed is that we tend to use the word migration as inversion and the word as inversion as migration. And I don't think that this is the same. And migration is a reflection seismology concept. Basically, we are trying to find with migration where are the boundaries or the discontinuities that are reflecting waves into the Earth. Yeah, when in inversion, we want to do something else. We want also to get some idea of the reflection strength of these boundaries. So, okay. So there is a difference there. And the other difference is that migration is full of names. Yeah, imaging condition, downward propagation, upward propagation, that probably don't mean anything for you. But the nice thing is that if you tackle the problem of migration as an inverse problem, linearized inverse problems, of course, all this concept will become clear. Okay, oh, this is what I call an imaging condition. Oh, this is what I call downward continuation. So everything is related. Okay? So to some extent, migration is some kind of a poor man inversion, which has been very successful for daily industry. Okay? So how can we put my imaging, or this is another word that we use, imaging, as migration, in the concept of inversion? Well, we can start with for the acoustic case with the Helmholtz equation, okay, where c is the speed of my medium, okay. W is the source. This is the position of the source, and we do the Born, you know, replacement 1/c² 1/c0² plus f. F is my acoustic potential. C naught. It's a background velocity that we're going to assume that is small, that is known, sorry. F, we're going to assume that is known, is small, sorry. And basically, we can replace this here, play a little bit, and what we can get is another equation. We can move all that we don't know to the right side here, and so we have like a new source term that involves the wave field and F, okay? Well, we know the Green function of the problem. We can write down this problem as an integral equation using what is called the Lidman-Schwinger equation, okay? So where we have the wave field is equal to something plus something by the acoustic potential by the wave field. So this wasn't a very intelligent replacement because I have wave field and wave field here, okay? And this is wave field recording in the surface of the Earth, and this is wave field everywhere. So basically we have a lot of unknowns here. So, and what we want to have is something that we know, and something simple that we don't know, yeah, but we don't want to have this wave field there, for sure. So this is where the Born approximation comes in. Okay. Basically, you see that U is an incident or a direct wave field plus a scattered wave field. If you assume that F is small, as a first-order approximation, you can write that the scattered wave field is given by this integral equation. Okay, and basically you don't have any more here the wave field inside the integral. You have Green functions, have the potential being sandwiched by two Green functions. The first Green function is the receiver Green function. The second Green function is what we call the source Green function. This is what we call the wavelet, okay? And this is what we should be measuring. Now, of course, we don't measure this. Okay, we measure all the wave field, so there is a lot of processing involved to turn what we measure into a scattered wave field. So what do we do? Okay, we remove the primary arrival, the incident wave field. We remove the surface wave, everything that is we don't know how to model. And we remove the multiples. Okay, we remove the wavelets that are bouncing like this, the waves that are bouncing like that. Another important thing is that this wavelet is usually unknown. So we have to do some wavelet processing to either remove the wavelet or to either know what is the source. It cannot be measured. Can be only, I think it can be measured in the marine case, but in most cases it cannot be measured. Okay? So to arrive to this point and to do inversion or migration, which would be try to recover this guy from this, we have to do a lot of processing. So somehow, geophysicists along the year, they have been quite smart in breaking down an ugly nonlinear problem into a linear one with a lot of processing, you know, in front of this linear problem. Okay? So wavelet removal, multiple suppression, signal-to-noise ratio enhancement, a lot of things are done before starting to work with this. When I talk about the problem of the source in my department, I am working in the Department of Physics, the physicists, they think that I am crazy because, oh, it's a deconvolution problem. This is simple. Well, it's simple. Astronomers know the source, you know, physicists know the source. Remember, you know, geophysicists, in reflection seismology, we don't know the source. So this is why removing the source is important, because we don't know it. We have first to estimate. We have another. So, migration would be to have an algorithm that gives me some idea of this F when the input to my black box is the scattered wave field. Okay? So one can use for that the adjoint operator. People have talked about this several times in this conference. And so if U is B apply on F, where B is the Born operator, so the adjoint would be F hat, F tilde, which is B prime by U. Okay? And this is the definition of that the adjoint has to satisfy. So, and this is the expression of the adjoint. Basically, it's similar to the previous expression, but now we have wave field sandwiched between green functions. And we take the conjugate of these green functions. Okay, in the other case, the integral was over the volume, where here the integral is over frequency and over receiver and sources. So here is another interesting problem. We don't have a continuous acquisition of receivers and sources. Receivers and sources are discrete, in the field. It is a source. We have something like this. Then these sources move here, and all these receivers are moved in the other direction, and we can have another shot. But it's clear that both sources and receivers, they are occupying discrete spaces in the space. So this is another problem that we have here. The other problem is that we have, of course, to define a green function. And this is what this is where the two main kind of migrations algorithms or imaging algorithms come in now. If you use green functions derived using ray theory, you end up having migration codes that look like what is called Kirchhoff migration codes. Yeah, if you use wave equation techniques or phase shift techniques, like Gary was working, you have what are called, I don't know, wave equation method or
extrapolation,
whatever. Extrapolators. Okay, some remarks. So, if C0 is constant, it's the first Born approximation. This is the case that the first speaker mentioned today. If C is C0 of X, is the distorted Born approximation. Okay. It's true that G can be written explicitly only for very simple models. In general, when we have a complicated background model, they had to be estimated with some numerical technique. So one possibility is use the high-frequency approximation where G is A by it's an amplitude term by e to omega tau. Tau is travel time. It would be travel time to go from x to y. And tau is the solution of the iconal equation, and a is the solution of the transport equation. Okay. One of the problems of using this kind of Green functions to do imaging is that these travel times are not so easy to compute. They can be computed using ray tracing techniques. And one of the problems in this kind of Kirchhoff-style migration, let's say, is that you end up having these maps of rays that are kind of sparse, yeah? And what you want to have is travel time at each position in your volume, so you need to use some kind of interpolation technique of wavefront construction technique. So this is very simple. It's just done with MATLAB. I parameterize the velocity with splines, and I run a Runge-Kutta for the four. It's quite simple. The big problem would be here, how do you get travel times in between? Yeah, this is an initial, it's called an initial value problem, yeah, whatever. You give a takeoff angle, and you trace a ray. So one way of avoiding using this kind of ray Green function is to use extrapolators. Okay. Now here is another problem. When you read about migration using extrapolation, people forget where, you know, these extrapolators are coming from. You know what I mean? Yeah, they were used to extrapolate wave field inside the Earth. But why do we want to extrapolate wave field inside the Earth? And so you can still use the Born approximation to see why you need this extrapolators, and this is what happened when I write down my forward and adjoint operators in the wave number domain. So usually we have a source and a receiver. If this is the position of the source and this is the position of the receiver, this is what we define offset, which is okay. Well, this is the semi-offset actually.
Minus.
Let's say minus. Yeah, good. and this is what we call the midpoint. Okay. So rather than using the original coordinates source and receiver, we use the central coordinate, the midpoint. All right, and the offset, which is the distance between source and receiver. Okay. So the data is acquired in this using this kind of acquisition, but it can be sorted in the computer in this kind of acquisition, okay? So KY would be the midpoint wave number and KH the offset wave number. So we take our data that is 3D, yeah, because depends on time, midpoint, and offset. We do the 3D Fourier transform. And this is the forward operator, and this is the direct operator, and this is the adjoint. Kz is a double square root operator, okay? Now, this is valid only for C equals C naught of Z, only for the case where the velocities are a function of depth only. Okay, so basically we can try to understand what these two guys are doing. Basically, let's look at the adjoint. The adjoint is something that we have wave field here recorded at the surface. Let's forget about this. These are all constant, which people usually throw away in migration. Not this for sure. But if you look at all this guy, what he's doing is generated wave field inside the Earth. Yeah, the wave field is recorded here, and this operator is computing the wave field at the depth z plus delta z. Z plus 2 delta Z. So basically, this is nothing else than the downward continuation operator that we are constantly talking about, yeah, in seismology. Then we have two integrations, one over frequency and others over KH. And this is what we call the imaging condition. I think that this is coming from an original work by Lowenthal in where they use something called the exploding reflection analogy, and integration over omega would be to record wave fields at t equals 0, assuming that the reflectors are exploding rather than the having source on the surface of the Earth. Now, this is kind of well known. You can find this in the book by Stolt and Benson. It's very nice. But the nice thing that Born leads to something like that leads to the seismic reflection jargon, basically, yeah, downward continuation imaging condition. So this operator is doing the opposite. It's trying to upward continuating the wave field. Okay. So this is what these two are doing. So the big problem is where we know how to do this in BOZ, basically. We are going to see just a little bit what to do in BOFXZ. But first, remember that we have something like this inside the integral. And this is the wave field recorded in the surface. And we want to know the wave field everywhere. Well, this can be approximated in this way. And we can find a recursive implementation where the wave field at Z can be used to predict the wave field at Z plus delta Z. And this is the downward propagator operator. So this is what we use to generate wave field everywhere in dev. This wave field then is plugged into that integral, this condition of summation over frequency and wave number is applied, and this is how we get an image, basically. But again, in this case Z, remember that it's valid only for, it's the vertical wave number is valid only for when the velocity is a function of depth only. So we can use other algorithms now to try to modify this extrapolator to handle the heterogeneous case, the case where the velocity is a function of x2, and this is what Gary was talking today. So this is from a talk that I gave in the Department of Physics at U of A. So this is why I mentioned a reference from a paper published in Applied Optics, okay, not in a mathematical journal. So the physicists were very happy. So basically this is what's called the splitting trick that then has been proposed again and again and again and again by many, many groups, and I don't know who was the first one. Okay, some people call this, I'm not quite sure, pseudo screen? No. There are some similarities. Phase screen. And then there are... But in this paper was called... It was. I think that this is the place where the name splitting comes from. So basically you can split this operator in two operators. Okay? So this would be a downward continuation using... assuming that the Earth is BOZ, that you have a slab here of material that has constant velocity. And this is a correction. And the correction is given by this term. Okay? Now, this is an approximation, and you can prove that the way you apply this is in this way, the algorithm. And this is the nice thing, because when we think in images, in imaging with wave equation technique, you have to try always to have things that involve FFTs. Okay, you don't want to solve integrals without using FFTs. So then I think that the downward continuation is done by this. You take the wave field at depth Z in the wave number domain. You downward continue it, assuming that the Earth is BOZ. You come back, okay? You come back using the 2D to Y and H. You apply the correction, and you go away. You go back to Y and H, to K and K. So basically, what you have is 2D or 4. You have F is a two-dimensional Fourier transform or a four-dimensional Fourier transform. Why do I say that? Okay, in 3D it's a 4D Fourier transform, and in 2D it's a 2D Fourier transform. You see what I said? So basically, in the 2D, you have two FFTs per depth step, basically. So here I said other algorithms, and basically this is the project where Gary's involved in finding other algorithms that are more accurate than this, okay? So this is an example of the Marmoussi model, the what we all use to test our algorithms. And so this is the smooth Marmoussi model. And this is the result using Kirchhoff, Bohr, Kirchhoff. Basically, this is what I mean by computing travel times, interpolating them using any approximation, you know, paraxial rays or whatever. And I mean, this is a tough problem. It's a very rough velocity model. So it's kind of difficult to image the data using this. And when you run this using the split step technique or the wave equation propagators, to get something that is much nicer. All right? Now, people have stayed away of these techniques for years because they say, oh, they are too expensive. Where Kirchhoff is very fast, it's just once you have been able to compute your travel times, it's a problem of reading data and travel times from a hard disk, nothing else. Migration becomes that. And so people, but today with new computers, this is not a problem. And for instance, we have managed to implement this algorithm in 2D in two systems, which is one. Okay, let me see. This is an Origin 2000 running OpenMP. This is a C code. And this is the same C code running with MPI on a cluster of Pentiums. So what I mean, this is what? I don't know. 100 seconds. It's nothing, okay? So you can't do this like this. And the reason why we are running on MPI, we have a couple of SGIs at U of A, but we know that in a couple of years when the price of the oil goes down, we have to work with clusters, and this is why we are learning you know, how to use a farm of cluster, because this is a very expensive machine. So, but what I mean is the other interesting thing that these codes are very easy to parallelize because each processor takes a frequency, and the only communication is at the end during the imaging condition when everything is brought back and summed together. So they, in that sense, are great. Now, the split-step approximation is an approximation, and how well does it work? Well, this is a velocity model. It has some problem there with the printer. This is the EAEG SEG velocity model, and the data from this model looks something like this. So this is the zero-offset data. By zero-offset means of all these source and receiver position, pick up the ones where the source and the receivers are in the same position. So this would be midpoint. You know, and each one of these is a seismogram, right? It's the set of offset seismogram. I wouldn't have been able to plot all the data together, yeah? There are like 50,000 traces, I don't remember. Sorry?
Really zero offset? It looks like an exploding reflector model. Or is it really?
No, this is zero offset.
It's really zero offset, so it was fully modeled from pre-stack.
Yeah, it was fully modeled from pre-stack data. Yeah, I got this from Sam Gray. I can ask him, but yeah. So, yeah, from it was with the guys from Amoco. So this is what happens when you use this split step. You get a very good image, you know, even if it's an approximation. Okay. I should have said that this is a kind of a difficult example because this is a solid body and the velocity is high. Yeah, like, I don't remember, 8,000 meters per second, whatever, right? Surrounded by low velocity layers. And the idea is to try to image layers underneath the solid body. Okay. Now you can further improve. Remember that in the split step correction you assume one step assuming that everything is constant velocity and then doing a correction. Well, you can divide your domain in different areas and assume, okay, from here to here the velocity of propagation is one, from here to here is another one, from here to here. And you can generalize this split step method. You can probably do that with any technique, with screening, with, yeah, and have a more accurate algorithm. But still, you know, we have done this, and the results, this is a blow up, are very similar. Yeah, you can position better some of the layers. So basically, here in this example, the background velocity is constant for all the model. Here we allow the background velocity to have up to 20 different patches, okay? So segment can be segmented after along the lines. So, well, this is about imaging. And so basically imaging with a adjoint operator. Well, yeah, this is true. F hat is the distorted version of F. So what can you do? Well, you can try to invert F. What I mean by distorted version, well, we get the right position of the layers, but this amplitude that we see there in red or black or whatever you are, color you are using is not a real representation of the reflection strength. Okay? So something has to be done. So one possibility is try to invert this. And well, I mean, the way I see this, this is very, not maybe mathematically, but if F hat is some point spreading function by F, well, try to adjust the two operators in such a way that this behaves like a very narrow function. So what you see here is a good representation of what's inside here. And if you look at the papers by Blinstein and Belki, more or less, they are trying to do that. You know, it took me some time to understand that, but okay. So let's say that imaging using the adjoint operator is the first one. Analytical solutions, or I don't know how to call the inversion. You know, like Blinstein or Wegeland, or even you know, call. I don't know how you call it. Real inversion. I don't know. Direct inversion, I don't know how to call it, would be to try to find an operator that when applied gives you something more better than the adjoint. And then here comes the next way to do it is just do it numerically. Okay? Try to find B by F such that this is close to you. This would be what people have called least squares migration. Least squares because they're using the norm too, but you know, I would call this migration through model fitting. I don't know. So you're trying to minimize this. This has some advantages, okay? The advantage is that you can introduce regularization terms and things like that. It has also some disadvantages, that it's expensive. And also the other disadvantage is that you are just fitting and you are not, like in this case, trying to understand resolution issues and things like that. Like Martin showed up the other day. So you're not so formal. So what are the advantages, I said, of trying to do this by model fitting would be, well, that you can introduce weighting functions. And the simple weighting function would be a weighting function in model space. And you can use diagonal weights, where the weights are very small. If the trace is dead, no information. And wave equal to 1 if the traces are alive. Okay, you can multiply. Okay? So, this seems stupid, but you have dead traces because remember that you are working with two dimensional Fourier transforms, so you need to have a regular acquisition, which you don't have. So, you will have a lot of places where you don't have information, you have zeros. So, this is like computing the Fourier transform of gap data. So, this is one of the problems is this kind of algorithms. Okay? So one of the things is that you can introduce these kind of things to minimize the influence of information that wasn't recorded. The other possibility is to introduce regularization term a la Tikhonov, yeah? I mean, where you are trying to, at the same time, satisfy two wishes, fit the data, and get a model with certain characteristics. All right. Okay. So the business of using a weighting function in models in data space is quite important. When we started to work on this was because a couple of companies in Calgary, they say, oh, what happens if we have an Evelyn sample data and I want to use wave equation techniques? Well, so these are some synthetics, and basically these are 100-shot gathers. This is the reflection strength, okay? And the true one, what we are trying to invert for. And we threw away 80% of the traces of the seismograms, or we replaced them by zero in this area of the model. So all the midpoints that are from here, they have been decimated by 80%. So the adjoint operator, the regular migration, even if you put some weights to account for the body illumination, this area, this is what you get. Now, when you do the least squares trick, trying to find something that fits the data with this weighting matrix, you can get a much better image. So this can be used for trying to compensate in imaging for areas where the data is not well illuminated. Now, this is an extreme example, okay, because usually when, you know, unless you are running, you know, you are shooting seismic data in a city, I don't know but what I mean. I don't think that you will have these kind of problems in real acquisition. They try to acquire data in a regular way. So the now this big L is not a matrix, of course. Yeah, it's an operator, and so what we use is the method of conjugate gradient. You could have used Gauss-Seidel and wait, you know, for a couple of years. I don't know, but. The interesting thing about conjugate gradient is conjugate gradient doesn't need matrices, needs operator, linear operator, and in definition you need to know what is B and what is B prime. So this means modeling or do it, and this is imaging or undo it. Okay, so basically you will replace your old CG by where you have a matrix multiplication, you will have a call to a subroutine that does the modeling, call to another subroutine that does the adjoint. So this is why I like CG so much. Okay, so and you can, you know, iterate. Theoretically, you have a lot of unknowns. You should do a lot of iterations. But we do 5, 6. You know, you try to do some preconditioning, and we are happy with the solution after 5, 6 iterations. We don't go forever. So this is a talk that I gave to also in physics. So I have to clarify something because it wasn't clear, but probably. Here is clear. So operators are subroutines, okay, or functions, or objects, whatever you want to call them. And so if B is the Bohr, yeah, Bohr is going to be downward continuation, some interpolation, some filtering, whatever you can imagine, an imaging condition. So you have a program to do each one of these tasks. So you need a program to do each one of these tasks too, you know. So this is B prime, the adjoint, could be to interchange these operators and to take the adjoint of each one of them. This is okay in math, in mathematical terms, but in computing terms it's hard because whatever you do here, you have to undo it here. How do you know that you are doing the right stuff? So the trick is to make it pass the dot product test. You take each one of these operators, you know, you take random numbers, you compute these, you take normal number here, you compute the dot product test, then you take this and you apply this, and you see that these two things coincide to 10 to the minus 10, whatever you want, and you are happy, okay? You know, don't laugh. You know, we spend weeks and time trying to be sure that the things, one is the adjoint of the other. Otherwise, CG is not going to work. Okay. So, the other thing that we have been working is to use common angle imaging conditions. I think I put there a reference to Chuck Mosher, but there is work done before him by Martin Krupp, yeah? So I apologize for that. And so basically they replace the standard summation over frequency and KH by summation over PH, where PH is the ray parameter, where PH is KH over omega. Okay, so by doing that, they have shown that basically what you have is an operator that relates a p-dependent reflectivity to data. All right? Okay, so and still you can compute an odd operator, you can derive an odd operator where you go from data into this reflectivity, which is a function of p. So how do you think about this? So this is some kind of an image. For a given y midpoint position, or for a given y, for a given position in the Earth, this is an image of the reflection strength in depth versus the ray parameter. This is the way you do an interpretation, and this is quite important for interpreters doing ABO analysis, where not only they want to estimate the structure, or you know. The depth of the structure, but also they want to characterize how the reflection coefficient of these layers change with the angle, with the incident angle. Okay, and do analysis of that, because that can give them an idea what is VP over VS and other parameters that are used for as hydrocarbon indicators. So, what's the advantage of doing this? That if you have the right velocities, each one of these gathers is called M of P Y Z. They should look something like this. This is P, and this is for this is Z. This is for a one midpoint position. So these are called common angle, common peak. How do we call this? Common reflection point gathers.
Common image gathers.
So you want to, the idea is that if for each one of these Y position, midpoint position, you should get something like this, well, your regularization can be a smoothing terms along this direction, a first or a second derivative term, try to enforce some continuity between these events. These events don't have the same amplitude, okay? There is an ABO effect, an amplitude versus offset, or basis angle effect. So basically, this is the nice thing of working in this domain, is that you can introduce a regularization term that looks like this. DP means derivatives along P, one derivative order one taken to M. Okay? So this is what's called, it's not this, this is the Tikhonov, no, I don't know how it's called. Okay, it's first order derivative smoothing, but along P. Okay, this is one of the advantages. So we have manufacturers, a small example, and basically we have three layers. These are the velocities. The first layer has a velocity. This is BP, BS, and density. So we have generated a model using ray tracing. So, and this is a particular, okay, this is the reflection coefficient, how it changes with the ray parameter for the first reflection, the second reflection, and for the third reflection. So this is how this common image gather would look like. Okay, and this is the one that you compute using the adjoint operator, and this is the one that you compute using the least squares inversion after six iterations using the trick of smoothing along the parameter P. So basically what's going on is that it tries to improve the lateral continuity, kill some of the artifacts that are due to aperture effect and things like that. Okay? But again, we're always looking at what happens when you start to throw away data. This is the one of the important part of our research, I think. Try to... Okay? So when you throw away data, again, I think that we throw away randomly 80% of the data. But by the way, to throw data randomly is some kind of cheating, okay? It's worse if you really, you do it in a systematic fashion. So this is what you get a lot of artifacts, and this is what the least squares technique you get, okay? So this was a very simple example. Remember that Marmoussi example that was very complicated. These are the kind of common image gatherers. We don't have ABO information for the Marmoussi. In fact, the Marmoussi is an acoustic model, so it would be P versus P, PP reflection coefficient would be. So this is when you use all the data and you use the adjoint operator to estimate your common angle, your common image gather. This is when you throw away 80%. And this is after three iteration and five iteration of the CG algorithm. And these are the velocities of the layers in depth at that midpoint position. Now, to compute ray, these are layers that are deep in layers, so to compute real ABO parameters, you should know the deep of the layer, and given the deep of the layer and given the ray parameter, this can be converted into angle of incidence. So, but still, this is a good indicator for an interpreter to see if things are growing or things are not growing, and how to relate that to a possible model or to try to estimate the hydrocarbon indicator. So this is the last example I want to show. So you can use the this is sliding. So this is the full migration using the adjoint operator, the Marmoussi model, for only one ray parameter. So the inversion is run only one parameter. This is what happens when you remove 80% of the data, and this is after three iterations and six iterations of the using the least squares approach. So basically, in all cases, you solve the illumination problems. You know what I mean? It's like that you can restore somehow missing data. And the other thing is that you can get common angle images that look much better. So there is still a lot of things to do. First of all, convince the guys in the industry that this weighting function can minimize the fact that you don't have enough data. I mean, this really bothers them because they spend a lot of data, a lot of money in acquisition. So, so I think that it's a very interesting, area of research to see how to use this algorithm to try to minimize at some point how much you spend while you are acquiring data. So, this is all that I have to say. Thanks a lot. Okay. Yes.
That's terminology. So the smoothing with respect to P, is this the Simons principle? The smoothing with respect to P, to the parameter which introduces, is this a differential semblance?
No. Differential signal, I think that has something else, depending how you see it, you know. This is just a derivative term, like when you want to get the flattest or the smoothest model, you know.
Oh, okay.
It's something like that. So basically, try to enforce that consecutive adjacent traces look alike, look similar, you know, after inversion. Oh. I mean, it's just it's the only way I can do some clever regularization, because if you use damply squares, you are smoothing everything around. You know, use quadratic regularization. Okay, this is the problem. Yeah, sure.
Maybe add a little remark about the seismic industry, convince the seismic industry to shoot less data.
Yeah.
Some things that have been investigated, not with the wave equation method, but with the high-frequency methods, like the microlocal methods, is, in fact, you have numerically to invert the normal operator, compute the parametrics of the normal operator.
Mm-hmm.
And in high-frequency methods, you have other means of doing that. And that does the same thing, like accounting for missing data.
Yeah.
Automatically regularized in a similar way.
Yeah.
To your
yeah.
suggesting, of course. Now, tests have been done. You can actually use some numerical methods using checking discrepancies in numerical implementations of those operators to find optimal sampling of those, say, adjoint or inverse operators asymptotically. And you can actually show that you can easily do with two orders of magnitude less data if you use certain number theoretic sequences in shooting your rays, basically.
So it's the point. Yeah.
Now, that sounds very spectacular. And we published a paper on that some years ago.
The Hoop Spencer?
Yeah,
I have it.
Suppose that your data have truly random noise in them, then if you use number theoretic sequences in sampling, that is okay. But if you have any coherent noise in your data, it is actually a disaster. And,
I know.
There's a trade-off how far you can push basically getting rid of data. And, of course, Marmoussi was noise-free, so you never had...
We have other example. The other example was with noise.
So it's somewhere probably, think you mentioned 80%, but it's probably somewhere in between.
Yeah, I think that the trick is going to... A lot of stuff has been done in the sampling, irregular sampling theory. I think that everything is depending on how many wave numbers you need to describe your model. Yeah, you can shrink that. If your model is simple, you can use band limiting operator even, to do this. So I think that it depends on how complex is your model. And all these techniques, they are going to need some a priori knowledge of your model distribution in wave number. How does it work? Yeah. So, by the way, I read your paper, and I enjoyed it, but some of the stuff were quite difficult, so I have to ask you. And similar things has been tried with the Fourier transform, for instance, and in 2D and 1D image processing problems. And then there is a follow-up to your paper by Schuster, also in geophysics. I know you have seen it there. So, thanks for... Yes?
When you do output these squares of this fashion, your objective function is highly non-convex because just suppose you have the wrong background model and you're just off one cycle and you have a lot of data. So your objective function, you sort of expect to look flat and then have a deep valley. How are you getting around that?
Well, I guess that you... I don't know if I understood the question. The two objective the linearized version, is susceptive, so things are convex. Now, if you are too far away from your background velocity model, these things are not going to be flat, right? So you will have to run a migration velocity analysis to recompute your background velocities until these things are flat. So you can use a lot of smoothing because otherwise you are going to make things flat. This is why the business for 3-4 iterations, looking at the data, be sure that it matches. But you are right. But this is another big problem, the problem of migration velocity analysis.
Yeah, I guess what I'm probably asking, are you really dependent on having a very good initial guess? Are you really dependent on having a very good...
All migration is based on... it's linearized inversion, so it's linearized non-linear inversion, so... You need a good initial guess, always. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you ran more CG iterations, would the answer start to look worse?
Yeah. Yeah, unless you start to do combination of damping and derivatives. But then your code gets too complicated. So this is stuff, we want a production code, robust one, so the 3-4-5 iteration recipe is... Good. So,
thank the speaker again.
Okay, thanks.
And we'll take 5 minutes.